Welcome to Bankless Africa, a podcast by Africans on building and innovating Web3 into a new frontier for the people of Africa. I'm your host, Miss Purple, and each episode, I get together with some wonderful people across the continent and the diaspora to talk, ideate, and dream about the bright future of our people. Stay tuned for another exciting episode.
Welcome to another phenomenal episode of Bankless Africa. Today, I'm super excited because I am able to record this in Kenya, where I came for ETH Safari, which is the first ETH event in the entire continent. I have the pleasure today to speak with somebody who is building in a way that is quite... It hits home for me, you know, because it's about storytelling. It's about capturing an essence of life that we seem to lose a lot when we move forward and we progress with technology. We forget to look at the stories and the, you know, the lessons and the wisdom that we can find in these written pieces of work. So today I have the chief himself. How are you doing?
I am well.
I'm great. I'm so excited to be able to speak with you. This is the first time we're able to do an in-person podcast, so it's the first, hopefully, of many. And I think it's going to be quite monumental, especially because what you're doing is, it's like I mentioned, it's very close to my heart and my personal passion. So can you just, you know, tell us who exactly you are and maybe talk a bit about your history when it comes to storytelling and specifically in the comic scene?
I was originally trained as a lawyer and accountant. I went to university in 2003. And the accounting came in because there was a strike going on in university. So my parents wanted me to do something. So I was doing those simultaneously. I'd be running between exams in two different schools. Then I graduated in 2007. And Kenya had suspended rule of law.
Oh my goodness.
And if you're a lawyer, you ask yourself, where do you fit in all of this when people have decided to suspend law? So I kept on working. I did pupillage, but the question just stayed. And one day, there was, in about like 2009, there was an advertisement about, you know, make comics and then you might get a prize. Mm. So I enrolled and I tried to apply for the prize. I didn't get the prize, but the process was fun.
Yeah.
It made me like, maybe I can do this, because the drawing was there. But it's like one of those things which are not primary when you're, you know, trying to find a career.
Mm.
It's just one of the things, like somebody can be working in a bank and they're a good dancer, you know. Because of that post-election 2007 thing, it made me start reading on more on Kenyan history, specifically Britain's Gulag. I wanted to tell this story, and also studying law had given me a certain background, and I want to tell it in a way that's not academic, that you can do in popular fiction, that anybody pick this up, they recognize, you know? So yeah, I went into like a year of research, just immersing in that period, walking around Nairobi to try and imagine what it was like in 1952. And yeah, then in October of 2010, I drew a four-part series called Emergency, because it was talking about the emergency in 1952. And that was my introduction to doing like popular comics.
And how did that go?
It went well. There was a lot of those days it was just people retweeting stuff. For me, the highlight was when Questlove of The Roots retweeted. One of the interviews, I was using Che Guevara type language, and you know, people liked. Yeah, but it was not sustainable to just social media.
Of
course. Like Okui talks about a lot, just uploading to the cloud without any real plan
for you to find or to access that information. Mm. Are there, you know, succinct documentation of that history, or are you finding that you had to do more, maybe interview some people, find things that have been lost, you know, rediscover?
Especially in Nairobi, there are certain buildings that are old.
Okay.
And if you take a walk from Kenyatta Avenue, if you go to the museum, which is right at the Kenyatta Avenue Uhuru Highway intersection, they actually have walking tours of Nairobi. You can be given a guide and you can walk all the way for like 500 bob. They walk you all the way from the railway station all the way down to Norfolk, telling you which buildings, when. So you can do those, you know, physical tours. And then there's tons of resources online, books. There's a lot. there's not a lot of everything. Obviously, there's the way in which they obviously emphasize their own history, which was the
facts.
How they were arriving and perceiving what was going on
What was the actual truth, of course.
And for their convenience, of course.
So how did, with all of this, you know, we're getting lore, we're getting a bit of art, you know, and some storytelling and historical curiosity and a cultural preservation there. But where does all of this connect with, you know, the Web3 space, this digital avenue, when what you're trying to do feels a lot more like, you know, you want to be more on the ground and feel with the people, and it sounds more like an ink on paper kind of project, but you've connected it with blockchain technology somehow. Where is that connection?
As artists, we are always, always looking for avenues to distribute, looking for avenues to, looking for ways of monetizing the content. I mean, like, part of the reason, for example, I don't sell paintings is because I don't want to start hating my work. Too much work to haul one painting at a time. And I'd like to stay in love with that. So I make paintings for myself. I maybe give to a loved one on a special occasion. But when it comes to, like, as a business, I'd much rather make digital art and then replicate it and sell that and let it have its own life interacting with, you know, people who connect with it. That's my own... That's how I make sense of it. Because I feel like the subatomic particle of what we are doing is story. The mediums are so variable.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at trust, for example, it's at all levels. It's a physical book. It's a digital book. It's a motion comic. It's an NFT collection. If you don't have something grounding all your experiments with limited time and resources, the thing that connects all those things is the story.
So talk us through trust a little bit. What is it? You know, you mentioned it comes in various mediums and all of that, but what exactly is trust all about?
Okay, so after about a decade of working in comics and animation in different ways, like working in a newspaper for like 4 years, doing a daily comic, to, you know, running an animation studio and trying to get animated films out, I decided to, like, kind of deepen my knowledge a bit. So I went for a program in California. I got a scholarship, and it was at that program that I met Anne, who's a blockchain expert. The entire program was about exponential technologies, what they mean for our future, how to imagine the future, all those different type of things. It introduced me to that world of studying change. And it was a few years after we had met with Anne that she got the idea to do a graphic novel that explained blockchain, because she'd seen what I'd done after I published Art of Unlearning. So I just became a student for the next, from 2019, I just became a student, and we'd have weekly calls that we scheduled, and she was kind of like a project manager, and I was, you know, thinking up these concepts, and the whole idea was to try and relate blockchain to existing forms of decentralization, existing forms of record keeping. And, you know, of course, that's a very interesting story to tell, because record keeping is, we've always done record keeping in different ways. We've always had different forms of ledgers and communicating them widely. So yeah, so that's how we did trust. It was meant as an education book to just take people from zero to one, as in not knowing anything about blockchain to having a basic understanding. What is this? What is decentralization? What are DAOs? And yeah, it's been received well. It's been received well.
I saw a clip of it at yesterday at the screening.
Yeah.
So that was phenomenal. You know, it's so exciting to see these things come out of the continent, and we're not waiting for anybody to come and save us, or anybody to come and teach us and help us and educate us.
Yeah.
We're taking it upon ourselves, you know, to build our own archives, to build our own educational platforms, and, you know, wave in. This is what happens when you try to be one with the wild. But
the raven is associated with the dream maker in Sandman.
Of course, I know. That and the crow. So it's it's quite interesting that it's,
we are making
it's
dreams.
Here today. Yeah, you know, we're making dreams come true.
And these two.
Double the dreams. So, you know, you're seeing a lot more people take actual initiative to put together programs that can help educate people. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know how, you know, you started off, of course, in this space. It wasn't always your plan or anything of that sort to get into this. But now you spend all these years learning and being a student, and you discover that you could actually contribute in a very positive way. Surely there is some element of success that you're hoping for, right? Yeah. So can you tell us what that looks like? What does being successful with this particular endeavor of the graphic novel and the motion picture, all of it, what does that being successful look like for you?
Success means creative freedom, being able to create from love, and freedom from anxieties such as, you know, being able to take your kids to school and, you know, just live a normal life. A lot of the reason why artists are stigmatized as being of unstable mental health is actually material factors, like, you know, people living insecurely, not having a home and all those things. And you say, oh, you know, they have a tendency to hang themselves. So success means, you know, freedom from those anxieties. And also creative freedom, which is extremely important. Otherwise, how are you going to do your work?
Exactly.
The problem with different business models that we've explored in the past, like especially working in advertising, for example, that is, you're supposed to explicitly promote brands, is that it constrains the scope of story that you can do, the range of things you can talk about. A brand might be like, oh, you know, it's not, it's politically sensitive to talk about work and then history, emergency, all these things. But, you know, I like the, one of the things that's attractive to me about the crypto community, the blockchain community, is that they are inviting really interesting philosophical questions, you know, about the architecture of community, about how decision-making gets done, about the fact that when we made representative democracy, the fastest thing that could move was a horse.
Mm.
So the best thing that you could do on a large scale to organize a state was that you find one villager among you and you send them to speak on behalf of all of you and all your problems. And that already limits how effective it can be, because one person can't represent.
Yeah, there's, you know, always going to be a different opinion.
Even starting from a very basic level, if you're sending a man to the capital to represent, he might not be well-versed in reproductive health, what the best needs are, whatever. So just because it was the best thing we had at the time a horse could move, doesn't mean that we shouldn't be looking for
to
ways
evolve
in
from
which
it.
To decentralize even further, that people could register their choices at an individual level like that. Because it might completely change the assumptions that we have about the laws that we have, especially in places of the world which come from a legacy of colonialism, when there were two types of laws. There was the civil law, which applied to the settler and settlers from and people who they brought from other colonies. And then there was the customary law, which divided Africans into countless
little tribes, Bantustans. Yes.
You know, and it made us permanent minorities in our own country.
Mm.
We must move away from that. We must now start, like, if I have a personal perspective on reproductive health, I should be able to register that. Just because my position is not popular
does not mean it does not count.
Because what is to be made of religious minorities, for example, if my religion is not popular? Notice that all these laws that we have against, like, same-sex unions and things like this, these were penal code things that came with British administration. Everywhere where there was British, you had this.
You had these issues.
So we should not feel any strong sense of commitment to these penal codes. And the same way, we should not have strong commitment to these borders, these straight lines that were drawn.
Yeah.
And if there's architecture that can allow us to move it in material ways, such as money, such as trade, such as the share of ideas. I can't think of an African country I've gone that I felt alienated.
Oh, of course.
And I feel like African people are already united. It's not even a tier and aspiration. What is not reflected is in the state institutions that that manage different territories.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that have been made not just philosophical musings, but they've been made practical questions by the technology.
Mm.
And I find that attractive.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting how, you know, the space is radicalizing but also challenging people's ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so decentralized and because you can exist without, you know, without needing to say, I'm a majority, so I can do this. You know, you can simply put yourself into the space because you can, because you want to, or because you have something to share.
Mm-hmm.
It challenges people to reconsider everything they thought they knew.
Yes.
And by so doing, you encourage people to go on this journey of discovery and of a new one of learning and unlearning and then relearning. You know, it's a whole process. But do you have a specific market or a specific group of people that you're targeting with trust, or, you know, you're hoping to find a broad community of people?
Yeah, I think Trust was written with a young adult in mind, even in terms of the style. When you're doing stuff for kids under the age of 10, you tend to use a lot more color, a lot more rounded shapes, things like that. Basic shapes, watercolor, paint. But then when you have teenagers, you have teenagers and young adults, you can have more nuance, and then also the type of storytelling which was being told. If you follow the protagonists, it's meant for young adults who can actually activate a knowledge about blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will bridge a very big gap, which is adoption. You know, as long as people don't understand what it is, then of course there's that apprehension.
Of course. Just a little of maybe personal reference here. You know, I'm from Lesotho,
mm-hmm.
and blockchain is not talked about
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
I have maybe two or three people that mm-hmm. I'll chat to once in a while, but that can't also happen every single day because, you know, you have lives and mm-hmm. you have other things to take care of.
Yeah.
So coming here, I mean, of course, I came to a conference, a whole event centered around this kind of technology.
Yeah.
It was the most phenomenal thing I've ever seen
mm-hmm.
because people here openly talk about the changes that decentralization can bring,
mm-hmm.
not just to them as individuals, but to our entire continent and mm-hmm. all the economies that exist within, you know?
Yeah.
And you were right in saying that there is this connection that doesn't need to be bought or taught. It's just there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I arrived here and I look like the locals.
Mm-hmm.
If I could only speak Kiswahili, I would probably pass for one.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting to see people actually exploring it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right in saying that, you know, we could have more.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely need more people in that space. And we have so much potential because we have so many stories to share.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have so many things to innovate. We have so many things to create and actually bring to life. There's so many ideas that have, you know, been brought to the table, but unfortunately they couldn't move forward because there was no funding for it. But I think, you know, this decentralization of everything, of processes, of technology, of art, of connections, of people, that offers an opportunity for people to, you know, maybe access a different kind of funding that hasn't previously been available to them. So I'm curious to know specifically for you, have you raised funds, you know, more in the maybe Web 2 or in a more personal connections? Or are you looking to raise, you know, via NFTs or equity or anything of that sort? Or do you have investors? How are you able to fund all the, you know, processes and all the execution you're putting out and those in the future as well?
Our biggest investor on Trust Graphic Novel was Algorand Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us something around $70,000 for the motion comics.
Mm.
And most of it went to paying actors, paying animators, over a course of 3 years. You know, for like, it's expensive making animations.
Of
there's a reason why we don't have feature-length animations in Africa. What you tend to have is just like 2-minute skits, comedy skits, typically about around music.
Because they're
like
expensive.
It's super expensive. And even with Trust, you notice that there wasn't any lip syncing and walk cycles because that would just take way too much time. And we don't have that capacity yet. What a lot of the American animation companies do is that they outsource to Philippines. So they do like keyframes and, you know, Philippines is a big market for just doing grant work in animation.
Yes.
And you know, the government sees opportunities like that, and you know, Ken Film Commission is coming up supporting animation. They've even supported another animation that we're doing, which we're going to release a month from Trust. We wanted to breathe, space them out a little bit. One is for young kids. So you have state funding, Kenya Film Commission mostly, and in trust case it was Algorand. There was also Africalia, which gave us the seed for being able to make the pilot, a small grant, $1,000, but that was enough.
But it makes a big difference.
At the time, so basically we didn't pay ourselves. We just basically invested everything into the production, with the hope that that pilot would, which it did. So, and then of course there's Consensus and Gitcoin. Gitcoin is really interesting, and just the process of doing it made me learn about things which I wouldn't have learned about otherwise. And I think that's the most effective way of learning a new thing. Like, for example, if you look at the software Photoshop, I think the best way to get into it is just learning to solve a problem that you have. Like, maybe you need clouds and you want to figure out how to do clouds.
So do clouds.
That's your task.
Yeah.
To figure out how to do clouds. When you try and go through a user manual to implement every function, it's infinite.
Yeah.
So that's the same thing with, I didn't even care about the name Web3 or whatever. We were just trying to solve problems. Problem number one was how to make NFTs that actually work. Because the first time we tried it, we did an auction, a 30-day auction with a bid price, and that didn't work very well. So we tried a different approach this time, and we've already sold 2 out of 10. And even something like Gitcoin, for example, who was one of our sponsors. It was because we already used to do Kickstarter campaigns. Mm. It's not very different than a Kickstarter. It's actually quite similar. But instead of doing what you're doing, Kickstarter, of sending people prizes, one prize after the other, it's a different, there are different possibilities with that, you know. People can have equity in the form of NFTs and things like that.
And that means their support becomes a bit more, you know, authentic and regular.
Exactly.
Because you know that you have a stake in this, so you want it to do well.
Yeah.
Because then if it does well, you do well.
Exactly.
And, you know, that kind of mentality definitely encourages.
Yeah. Rather than the Kickstarter model, which is just, you know, you send a present.
Yes, and then I'm done with you. Thanks.
So those were the experiments. Gitcoin has been very interesting. Learning about things like quadratic funding, which is a way of, it's basically, it's mathematics. Some crazy formula, sigma, whatever. In a way, it's basically weighting votes to take into account, to neutralize the effect of large contributions. Because when you have a community and there's voting and somebody has like 10x the number of tokens of
then they essentially control
the vote. They can have disproportionate impact on the decision. So it kind of distributes that in terms of the voting. Mm. So people are looking at it a lot for public goods, being able to fund public goods, things like forests.
Yes.
I can't confess that I understand it all, but
of course,
just having
learning
to do
process.
Crowdfunding on Gitcoin opened up these questions and made me look more into that, and it seems very interesting. Obviously, in talking with a lot of my creative friends who work a lot in conservation, this brought ecological questions. You're trying to change the world by increasing emissions, by pushing the gas to the floor, you know, with Bitcoin. And then, you know, Ethereum answering that question by, you know, developing a new system where you don't burn as much, but that doesn't affect the Bitcoin network.
Which is still very prominent in the continent, so that still needs a bit of work in that end.
Yeah. So so for me, it's just a space of curiosity and creativity, and because these are interesting questions.
Yeah.
And when you ask them, I think the proof is in the pudding. If you look at the reception of the thing, that means other people are asking these questions also. So it's high time. We are ready to move beyond. The key impulse is that we are ready to move beyond depending on representatives of the community, because I like your face, for you. You have a name.
I like how you
like
speak.
Mine.
You know,
like in Kenya right now, the deputy president is talking about how we should reintroduce chamber system in forests, that people can go into forests and farm inside there and help sustain the forest. It's BS. It's just you know. So anyway, I mean, these are problems with representatives. Mm-hmm. You want people to be able to.
I like how you kind of came into the space more out of curiosity versus some who come in and they say, I want to make money here. Mm-hmm. I need to figure out how I'm going to make money here.
For me, it's not interesting, to be honest. Like, I know there are people for whom trading is interesting, but I just wasn't built that way.
Yeah.
If I can find a way of decentralizing it, probably there are ways of decentralizing it, you know. Actually, maybe that's what would work for me. But no, it's not the thing that was most interesting, because it actually resembles very much the world we've come from. People are already trading on the death of forests and things like that, the collapse of housing markets. There are already people making such bets in the existing stock market. So more of the same is not really revolutionary for me. It's not interesting.
It's a very interesting perspective to have there.
For me, what's interesting is giving people a chance they didn't have it before. Mm-hmm. You know, banks have been very arrogant. Even for me, with the amount of experience and work that I've done, the financial system will harass me just getting a credit card, for example. A credit card which I don't even intend to use.
Yeah.
Want to use for, you know, internet transactions. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long rant.
That's a story for another day. You came, I'm assuming you came to Trust Comics on the 21st, I think. Yes. So why did you choose this particular event and this, you know, particular community of people? And how has your experience been in terms of, you know, finding these common thinkers in the space across the continent who are potentially also building towards a similar goal as you, and some that are maybe on the opposing end and they're looking at it more for financial gains? Mm-hmm. What is, you know, the whole experience of all of that been like, and do you feel like you made the right decision by deciding to launch here?
Well, the book was made for the community. We probably used the word community more than 200 times in the script. So you must live by your words, you know. If you're writing a book about a crypto community that saves the day by defeating the evil Max, so from that perspective it makes sense. And then also network effects. Yeah, the Raven agrees with us. Yeah, network effects. Mm-hmm. You go where your impact will be felt. You go where
the people are. Yes.
Algorand was here as well. Mm-hmm. There were many, many overlapping reasons. And it's not like it was planned well in advance. Actually, if we had our way, we'd have published the book a year earlier. It's just that there were so many delays.
Yes. Things happen.
And then, because of all these things, you look around the calendar at the time, and this was just a perfect fit to embed our own launch, which we're going to have to do anyway, in something much larger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, coming here, I've been able to meet so many people, so many creatives, and I'm finding that there are so many things that are common with what it is that we're all building, but we haven't been able to connect to each other in that way. And I personally at least think that that's the key to find a way to connect more. I mean, it doesn't always have to be physical events, but I think we definitely need to work to find ways to connect more, because, you know, like how I keep mentioning that this is something that for me, I'm interested in that.
Yes.
There were other projects that I came across here and people who were doing things, and I'm like, I've been trying to do the same thing. Yes. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. But instead of us trying to build from scratch every single time, if we know who these people are, we can reach out to them and we can work together. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have arms and branches all across the continent, people doing whatever it is that they're best at, and fully decentralizing this new frontier. And especially because I'm finding that a lot of us younger people, and by younger I mean, you know, I call us the Renaissance people, the ones who, we are here to bring the change and we will not stop no matter what cost, you know. There's a lot of us across both the continent and, you know, Pan-Africans as well. A lot of people are looking to see Africa be the greatest continent in the world, because we know we are, you know, we just haven't been able to realize it in a more physical sense, in a tangible way. And even in, you know, being able to tell our stories, we haven't been free to tell our stories like we are now. So it's quite phenomenal to be able to connect with so many people. But I would like to, you know, talk more about specifically with trust. Are there ways in which you're looking to evolve and keep working with other people as well? And if you are, how do people get involved with working with trust, either specifically with this one that you're working on, but maybe with other projects as well in the future that you plan to release?
It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Trust graphic novel, Trust motion comic. The studio is called Freehand Studios, at Freehand Studios on Instagram, Studios Freehand on Twitter. And it's trustgraphicnovel.com. So when you go there, you'll have every avenue that suits you. You can buy you can watch the digital book. You can read the digital book. It's free to download on Webtoons. On Amazon, you can order a physical copy. I know we are using legacy media.
I mean,
these are the rails which
you take us into. Yeah, it's unfortunately how it works.
We have a decentralized vendor. So every option is available. It's a video as well. You can leave comments. That's on the digital sphere. We hope to do sequels. So on where this goes, it's also an NFT collection. There should be, if I'm not wrong, I've not checked, there should be 8 more NFTs still online as part of the Trust collection on OpenSea. So if you visit the website, it will be able to lead you to whatever option.
Right. Well, we'll include all the links in the show notes so that people can be sure to access that. But I'm personally very excited about everything that it is that you're doing. I think the potential of this, and you know, it may for some people look like, why would you even bother?
Yeah.
You know, but I think from a perspective of somebody who understands just the sheer possibilities of the space, you understand that simply giving people the tools, you know, giving them the access to this information could change lives. Mm-hmm. It could change the way we see humanity, the way we see life. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've seen this many people, either people drawing or coding or, you know, putting together ideas in a very long time, you know. And this event has shown that Africans are very intentional when it comes to building for the betterment of their people and building for community, you know. And like how you said, if you're going to create something for community, you need to do it with the community. If you're going to, you know, say you're about it, then you need to be about it. You can't say one thing and then do the completely opposite other thing. So I hope that, you know, this conversation is a motivator for people who are creating to say, there's probably somebody else who's trying to solve the same problem. So don't be afraid to try. Don't be afraid to dip your toes in, you know, spread the word, talk about what it is you're building, because you will find that you isolate yourself if you think too hard about, you know, you being the savior. We're not, you know, we're merely just messengers. We're just here to transport and move to the next point and have somebody else come and take it from that point to the other. It's supposed to be a progressive thing where we all work together.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's very important for us to note that even with what you're doing, trust is just the beginning. You know, there'll be people who will build off of what they got from trust and, you know, build maybe off of what they saw in trust, maybe the potential, you know. But overall, we shouldn't be competing, you know. We shouldn't be operating and functioning in silos. So I'm very excited to see all that it is that you're doing. Being able to see all of that in real life is an absolute honor. I hope that, you know, you continue all the works that you're doing, and the support that you need from the people, I hope that you get that as well, because it's extremely important not just to get funds from people, but to get genuine, heartfelt support from people who understand your mission and are on. But just two final questions. Final question. Is there something in particular that bothers you about, you know, the space overall?
You mean the blockchain space?
Yes, but also specifically for people who are trying to get into it via the educational, you know, aspect of things.
Honestly, I was not even in contact with people who are trying to get into it from an educational space until I started doing the project.
Mm.
Then I learned about Africa Blockchain Institute in Rwanda. I met Kayodi, really cool guy. I'm seeing what they're doing in Rwanda most especially. So I myself, I'm still learning. I don't consider myself an expert.
Of course.
I'm just following the curiosity. Right now, it's an interesting, way
journey
of sharing my art with the world. I think this is where the escape velocity, if there is such a thing, lies. And yeah, just to continue experimenting, because that's what we were always doing as artists. We were always doing that. We were the, out of necessity, we were
yes.
the first in line for the Kickstarters and all things, and you know, and Kenya becoming now a home to such tools as well.
Mm.
Things like Anchanga.
Mm-hmm.
There's
so many innovators here.
So our optimism has to be grounded in action and experiments. Doesn't mean we'll get everything right.
Of course.
But
but you'll get it started.
Yeah. It beats wriggling your thumbs and saying that we are doomed.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers the question, but yeah, I it's very difficult. It's not easy for artists because the rails for the careers that you choose do not exist.
Mm-hmm.
But we can also use that as an opportunity.
Yeah. To carve our own lane, of course.
And the answer, of course, is in communities,
mm-hmm.
having communities, which is why I
you're very intentional.
I'm investing the time.
Yes.
In that. Yeah.
So one last question that I like to ask our guests on the podcast is to give me three words that essentially describe how you feel about the entire Web3 crypto, the whole space. How does it make you feel? Three words, it can be a phrase, it can be three individual words, whatever you want, whatever best explains how you feel about it.
The space?
Mm-hmm.
Cryptographic intelligent chaos.
I mean, it sounds like a t-shirt. I'm finding that every single one of these answers is actually, you know, very printable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe someday I'll create a mini Bankless Africa collection with all the three word lines that everybody is given, because I think, you know, in a strange way it sounds humorous now, but there's definite chaos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but chaos does not always mean it's terrible. You know, chaos is momentum, chaos is entropy, it's energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the chaos will possibly in some spaces be a breeding ground for very phenomenal innovations. So I'm all about that chaos.
Yeah.
Thank you again so much. We will of course link all the links that he mentioned in the show notes. Be sure to go watch the video, check out all the platforms where you can obtain the comic itself, be it in physical or where you can download it as well. We'll of course leave his social media handles just in case you want to find out more about them and keep in touch at all times. But once again, thank you so much for tuning in to this phenomenal episode.
Thank you for spending another episode with me. Just a reminder that none of what we share is financial advice, only opinions of the individuals that make this show possible. You can use the links in the show notes to do your own research. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening from. We are our own wildest dreams, the hope of our own tomorrow. So until next time, keep innovating.